Welcome to Arts ID on KRCB Radio, our showcase on Sonoma County arts and artists in all forms and flavors. I'm your host, Robin Pressman. This time, Arts ID focuses on storytelling from a very personal perspective. Tonight, three playwrights tell their own stories in very different ways. We'll hear from playwright Rebecca Miller, the author of Fault Lines, actor and playwright David Templeton, whose play Pinky premieres next week in Sebastopol, and stand-up comedian and playwright Dave Picorni tells us about West Side Stories in Petaluma. That's all ahead on Arts ID on KRCB Radio. First up tonight, Susan Swartz talks with playwright Rebecca Miller about her play Fault Lines, which recently had its West Coast premiere at Main Stage West in Sebastopol. Miller grew up in Sonoma County, now is an actor and playwright in New York, and she was a grade school friend of Polly Klass. Fault Lines is her fictional story of the effort of survivors of a similar tragedy to deal with their long-held grief. Susan Swartz talks with Rebecca Miller about how you tell a story that is yours, but not necessarily yours to tell.
Rebecca, I'd like to talk a little bit about the creative process in terms of your writing Fault Lines. Obviously, it is a play of which the impetus, as you say, in the program was this tragedy of Polly Klass that our county, of course, was very much involved in. And you personally, as a young girl, knew Polly.
Yeah.
So you take your connection to a story, a tragic story, but a major story, and you combine it with some facts. So you've got your memories, you've got the case.
Yeah.
And then you turn it into something, a third being, a third creature, really. Is that how it worked for you?
Well, first of all, I don't know why I always feel like I need to make it clear. I didn't know her at the time this happened. We had been friends when in elementary school, and she had gone on and changed schools, and I had lost track of her, like you do. You don't hold on to friendships when you're that young. And the next time I heard about her, it was on the news. So we were friends at Hidden Valley Elementary in Santa Rosa before she moved to Petaluma. So it was just this thing that, I guess the best way to describe it is it's like this thing I could never really integrate into my overall understanding of the world. It was, obviously, I think even for people who had never met her, it was completely terrifying. And just to feel like somebody I had known and really, really liked, that something so, unfair is like the smallest possible word you could use for it. But something so horrific could befall her, and it's due to nothing, no fault of her own or her parents, or it's just random.
And unexplainable and impossible to rationalize and impossible to say, but that wouldn't happen to me.
And how can you accept living in a world where something like this can just happen?
So this sat with you.
Yeah.
You lived with this. Like one of your characters talks about it being a tumor.
Yeah.
Was that how it was in a way
for you? I think so. I mean, and these characters obviously were much closer to it than I was, and I'm trying to respect the fact that there are people who are this close as these characters are, and which I am not.
Right.
But yeah, it was something that if I were to really take this into my understanding of the world, that makes the world into an unacceptable place. So it was something that would just like bubble up from time to time. And I would even find myself thinking like thinking about my friend Polly, who had been at my birthday party and you know, had given me a yo-yo and be like, what is she doing now? What college is she at? Mm-hmm. And it would be like the split second before I'd realize, no, she's Polly.
She's the one. Oh,
because I almost feel like there became, you know, Polly became an icon of mm-hmm. something. And it was of something outside of who she was. I'm sure as I knew her, and I'm sure as her, well, I imagine outside of how her family and friends knew her at the time.
And that was part of this. This is your imagining. This is you kind of creating how three girls who were there at this slumber party, how they have grown up to be. You don't know them.
I don't know them.
You
and in fact, I did not research them. And you know, the facts are that there were two people who witnessed this thing, and I wish for them to be left alone.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. And so you've never met them.
No, and none of these characters are based on them. And you know, I'm sure, I hope that they are in a better, happier place actually than these characters happen to be. These characters are just sort of my own reflections of my own thinking about what happened. And I'm also somebody who didn't take an active role in healing whatever damage was done mm-hmm. by this. And I feel like most of us didn't because we weren't so close to it. And there's something about shared trauma. Like, I live in New York City now. And, you know, people who were around during September 11th, almost nobody has sought counseling except for people who lost somebody
directly
or who were there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there is so much stored up trauma and pain. And I feel like it's sort of an analogous situation here.
Mm-hmm.
That people did have these incredibly strong reactions to what happened. But at least from my perspective, is I never felt like this is my story, this is my pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then this play just sort of bubbled out.
You have one of the characters saying, if I hadn't been there, it would have been a different kind of grief, wondering if I could have stopped it instead of knowing it was out of my control. So is that kind of where you are in that personal connection to the tragedy? I mean, I think that's how the audience feels.
Yeah.
We weren't there, but we imagined what we would have done or thought or the fear and the horror of it all.
I think it's easy to imagine having been there. I mean, there wasn't the circumstances of we were not in touch. So there wasn't really any chance of me having been at that particular party. And I remember the discussions at school. People were talking about it constantly. You know, what would you have done? You know, and the truth is...
You mean among your friends at school?
Yeah.
Did teachers talk about it?
Well, the teachers would sit us down and say, you guys can talk now.
Okay.
I mean, we stopped having health class for a couple of weeks because people just needed to vent. And, you know, bunches of us had gone to elementary school with her. I was at Santa Rosa Junior High at the time. And even for people who hadn't, it was on the tip of everybody's tongue. And I remember a girl... I remember it so clearly, it was in my math class, said, we have to stop talking about her because she won't be able to rest.
Oh.
And it's still, I still think of it, you know, mm-hmm. and it's been a scary idea of like, what if all this talking about her has mm-hmm. kept her from that?
Whoa, that's
yeah.
a good one.
Well, and then that begs a question of what is the value of bringing a play?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, the play is about a character named Nina. I mean, it's about her three friends who are mm-hmm. all fictional, and they're mourning this girl.
Was this the first time creatively you had drawn on that experience?
Oh, yeah. It was something that I tried to actively avoid thinking about. Also for this issue of ownership, I didn't feel like it was my issue.
And well, one of your characters says it is not your story.
Yeah, it doesn't belong to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some validity to that, but at the same time, there is this community of people who experience this thing that we're all still. I mean, the responses when we have performed it, the responses during the talkbacks, people are saying, "This is this thing that's never healed for me." So, and these are people who didn't know her, but just you know had children or were children or just heard about it. People are saying that it's actually been a helpful thing to sort of remember what this was like in order to confront it and start healing it.
You've heard that in the talkbacks
yeah.
here in Sonoma County.
Several times, yeah. And
so people yeah. who weren't connected,
yeah.
who would stand up and did they thank you?
Yeah, it's been really intense.
Whoa.
On Friday night, I went to see the show for the first time, and a woman introduced me to her son. I'm going to get emotional just talking about it. Who was born the day they found her.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And
Whoa.
He was this 18-year-old man standing
Whoa.
Here. So he was this embodiment of all this time that had passed. And she'd said, you know, you keep the newspaper, the front page of the newspaper from the day your child is
of
born.
Course.
And I've never been able to show it to him. So it's just been incredibly powerful.
Mm-hmm.
to be back here with it. It just means something different here than it could in New York. And, you know, New York audiences felt strongly about it, too, mm-hmm. because while it's about something specific and a specific place, it's also about the end of childhood. It's also about those things, the unexplainable things that happen in life in everyone's hometown.
Mm-hmm. The media plays an important part in this play. Was that something you wanted to talk specifically about in the play, that why do all these news people always have to come around? And I would have to say, as a news reporter, of course you have to come around. Something's happened right. in your town. You're not going to let it go. But do you feel like there's a line that is crossed at some point?
Yeah, I remember very specifically after they found her, there was a private moment of grief between her mother and her sister that ended up on camera. And I remember seeing it and just feeling like, oh, God, this is not something I should be a part of. I shouldn't be seeing this right now. And I was 12, you know, and it was such a strong impulse that this is wrong. And at the same time, there is this community's right to know. And as I've been writing this play, it took me a really long time to write it. Part of the reason was that, you know, how much of this is an act of exploitation?
How much is the play?
Of writing it, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, ultimately, I felt like all I can do is try to tell a story like this one, right? Because I'm not qualified to tell Polly's story. And it's really not even the story about the girl who gets kidnapped. It's a story about her friends trying to get through it. Mm-hmm. And how do you live with something like this mm-hmm. in your life? But it's always been this kind of issue of like, you know, I don't need to do anything that reminds the family that this happened to them. And that's something, honestly, I'm still struggling with.
As a member of the media, I remember, though, we've been so involved at the Press Democrat in all of these grisly murders. And then every time there's an anniversary of one of these grisly things, then the media comes back.
Yeah.
So you're right to remind people that there is this exploitation thing that happens. Foundations, every agency, every fundraiser, how much of that is an exploitation?
Well, and I thought a lot about, you know, what does it mean to build your life on something terrible that's happened and to create a life in activism in response to it? And I thought a lot about actually John Walsh,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what does it mean that his grief for his son has turned into this movement, really. But then I think about, you know, it's his living also.
Mm-hmm.
But then really, it's easy to sort of get judgy about people in these positions. And the truth is, if somebody's been through something like this, like what John Walsh went through, or any member of Polly's family, they have a right to react however they can to get through the day.
Exactly, yeah.
And we don't have the right to judge them for that.
Mm-hmm.
So despite the fact that my characters do some judging, mm-hmm. I'm hoping that everybody got enough of an opportunity to defend themselves and in the play, and that it doesn't come across as a judgment on my part.
And it's horrible that we have to use another person's tragedy to tell these stories, but that's what we do when we're as writers. We know that we write about what we know. And I did read an interview with you that you said that your husband said, "If you don't write this, I'm writing."
Yeah, he did. This had just come up somehow several years into our relationship, that the fact that this thing had happened in my hometown and that I had known her as a kid, and he was sort of blown away by it. And it just sort of kept bubbling up. Once, you know, it was one of those things that, like, you push it away, you don't want to deal with it. My husband finally said, you know, this is your play. And I was being a real wimp because I was talking about it, but I wasn't actively writing it. And he finally, he threatened me. He was like, you know, I'm going to sit down at my computer now and start outlining if you're not going to sit down and write this now. And he went to his computer and started typing. And I went, and I picked up my laptop and I stormed into the next room and started working.
Good husband.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a little bit about the humor.
Oh.
A lot of people laughing in
yeah.
the audience.
Thank God. I didn't think that was going to happen in Sonoma County at all.
But you knew the lines were in there
yes.
to hopefully draw some laughter.
And I tried to keep it all the way through. You know, we knew in New York, if our audience was not laughing in that first scene, we were sunk. Because from there, things get really heavy.
So you had, that's why we have a lot of the California wine country stuff in there.
Some pokes at the hippie culture behind this place.
I love that the spent hens.
Oh my gosh. Actually, I think spent hens is going to be a play of its own. I've been thinking about it for a long time. About the women who organize around these hens.
Did you make up the spent hens?
No, you know what? I read the Press Democrat for inspiration.
Oh, right.
You just never know. And it's the back page of the newspaper where you get the wacko stories. I also find a lot of sort of violence is happening here.
And I remember Tom Wolfe millions of years ago saying, you know, if you can't get an inspiration for a novel out of reading, you know, the local paper, then you have no imagination whatsoever. It was important as an audience member to have that humor there. And as a writer, was that important to have a way that the audience could relax a little?
Yeah.
Or else we were all going to just have breakdowns.
Yeah. Also, I think people tend to they don't lose their sense of humor because they're dealing with tragedy. And a lot of people use it as a coping mechanism. If this play gets, I actually have a note. I don't know if you read a copy with one of the playwright's notes at the beginning, but I say, you know, hey, actors, don't lean in on the drama of this play because the drama is there. This was something we really found through trial and error when my company produced it the first time. Actors are very proud of their ability to have painful emotions, and it's something that we are trained to do, and we, you know, it's like we're like the Marines of the soul. We want to just like, you know, be airdropped into despair and get there right away. And this play does not work that way. It will fall. It's like a souffle, you know. It'll fall in on itself. If you start with despair in that first scene, there's nowhere to go. And obviously, and I think they did a really good job of doing this here. There's so much intense emotion boiling underneath from the beginning.
Yes, and the woman, Bethany, the woman with the children and all that, and she's a wreck. Yeah. She's just such a wreck. And when finally the one character says, stop it, because we're all thinking that too, and people laugh. But from there on, there is humor. And my husband said, again, when we left, I said, I'm so thankful there were things to laugh at in this play. And he said, but I felt guilty laughing. I worried about it.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to be laughing?
I was feeling like, oh my gosh, no one in Sonoma County, people are going to come in knowing what this is about. The people in New York thought they were seeing a comedy for the first, you know, for the first scene. And really, what I tried to mine in that first scene is the nervous energy of people who don't know what they're walking into and are absolutely terrified. And that can be made funny. And I think that the Main Stage West production does an excellent job of mining that.
And I, again, going back to like a lot of the wine country barbs and some of the earthquake stuff. Do you have a fear of earthquakes? Is that why you're living in New York?
I know. I'm like, we have our own disasters, natural and otherwise, to deal with in New York. But, There's this awareness that it could happen at any time, and I feel like that is something that's very distinct to this place. Granted, when people ask me about, you know, fearing terrorist attacks in New York, I tell them it's totally analogous to this idea of earthquakes. Mm-hmm. You know something's going to get through at some point, and all you can do is just be as ready as possible. But really, there is no bracing yourself for it because you don't know what's coming. I mean, it's heaven here, and especially having lived somewhere else and coming back to visit now as a more of an adult. I look at these hills that I feel like are imprinted in me in some way, and it's so beautiful, and the weather is so mild, and the people are so proudly liberal and open-minded.
right.
Yes, at least in theory. And yet, this whole thing could literally crumble into dust at any moment, and it's happened in the past.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But the truth is, it's human nature to turn a blind eye to the difficult and scary possibilities. You just can't live in full awareness all the time without going insane.
One more thing. Was it harder emotionally for you writing the play or acting in it?
This whole thing, it was not a fun play for me to write. Even, you know, the funny parts, it was like, oh, good, something came out. Thank goodness, you know. I can avoid jumping off a building today. But it was so difficult to make myself go into my room and live, think about all these memories that I've been actively repressing for years. The hardest part of everything has been watching it. I mean, it's been brilliant. The productions are brilliant, and I've been really pleased with them. But coming to see it here, where it has real ramifications, where there are people who experienced it in a way much closer than I did. In New York, I could know that maybe with one or two exceptions, I probably had the closest relationship to the events that led me to write the play. But here, that's just nowhere near the case. There are family members, there are friends, there are people who were really impacted. So I've sort of been forced to ask myself again, like, what right do I have? What right do I have? What is the good of this? And to walk into it, you know, not being sure, honestly, you know, having to sort of question what my intentions are. And again, that has been terrifying, to see a family member who I recognize on site, you know, in the audience, and say, you know, why is this person putting themselves through this? And I hope not to contribute to this, to his pain, which is something beyond imagining. And it's something that the imagining of this pain prompted me to write the play. And then the idea of contributing to it is just heinous. So it's been terrifying, but ultimately really gratifying, because people feel like this has been a part of their healing process.
Susan Swartz talking with playwright Rebecca Miller about her play Fault Lines. It ran just recently at Main Stage West Theater in Sebastopol.